Hello and welcome to The Undermined, a podcast about brute war AI development. My name is Shonko, your host from MakingComputerDoThings.com. Let us begin. Welcome to the 27th episode of The Undermined. This week's guests are Hannes Bradberg. Hey, Hannes.
Hey, what's up?
And Ankh Mardor. Hey, welcome back.
Nice to be back.
And let's just start with the usual questions. What you've been up to lately? Did you do anything StarCraft related? Ankh, let's go with you first.
No, not really. I mean, I've been hanging out, trying to answer questions. It hasn't really been that many questions. It's just rehashing the old ones, I think, lately, about the difference between iScript units and the floating units. Other than that, I've been writing bug fixes for another game. I don't know if this is a PG stream or not, but
feel free to say anything you want.
I could describe it. I've been working on writing bug fixes for Strive for Power, which is basically a text-based adult game. And it just, there was various parts of the game that, since they leave, the creator left the game uncompiled, or it basically leaves the raw script files in the game so that people can mod it. So you can just pop it open if something bugs you, or if the game isn't working correctly, you just pop it open, see what's going on, and fix it.
Basically, if you don't like it, you make your own game with blackjack and hookers.
Sure.
Yeah, so if you're not aware, dear listener, the podcast is not really kid-oriented. It's 18-plus topics are allowed. No nasty stuff, so don't worry, we won't do like hate speech or anything like that. But some nastier jokes are absolutely allowed and will happen. All right, so this is a text-based game, you said?
Yep. It'll take various properties or events, and it compiles text from that. It's just simple string manipulation. You basically add a flag to the string, and it gets replaced with a property, stuff like that.
Did you play mods back in the day?
Mods?
Yeah. Those were text-based online games, like in back from the late 80s.
Oh, those. No, never touched it.
I played a little when I was a kid, but even then they were on the way out. It was like a novelty when the internet came in, but it faded out quickly because graphics-based games are much more fun, apparently. All right, with the editor, Hannes, my question to you is the same, what you've been up to, and I do know part of the answer.
Yeah, that's probably the entirety of my answer, too, to be honest. What I've been working on mostly is related to Schnell Bladder, or whatever you want to call it. I don't know if you've announced the name on the podcast yet, but the StarCraft AI as a service, if you'd like.
I like that as a marketing term. AI as a service. No, the official name is StarCraft Human and AI League, or Schnell for short. I feel Bladder is a little bit less digestible for your average user. The word is just not ready. And would you mind saying a few words about the technical difficulties of implementing your part in the project? Because I think it is interesting from a technical standpoint. Start from the very start, if you'd like.
Sure. So, like, the main problem is that StarCraft is a very old Windows-only game, which doesn't really do well in this kind of an environment. But thanks to many great projects such as Wine, BW Headless, and whatever else, we've been able to actually make it possible to automate everything we need through basically in running things in the cloud, and we can run the game headless, we can set up the connections, we can do use UPnP to connect the server and the client without doing any kind of port configuration. And the hardest part has probably been interoperating with everything related to the other things, basically like Wine and whatever else we need to do with file systems. And yeah, it's all basically all C APIs, and it's kind of very messy.
Yeah, it was basically implementing our own gateway for the bot plays. That was the first step, right?
Yeah, the first thing was actually getting the server and client connected. So we have to do a handshake with a server. I think we called it a coordinator. I don't know if you've talked about this on the podcast before, but basically it connects to there, gets the information from, like, as, hey, what do I do now? And it just spits out an IP and a port back at you. It sends that to StarCraft, and StarCraft talks to that IP and port, and that sets up the game for you. So Contacts gets the information over TCP and then sets up the UDP game sockets. So we've written everything from the handshake to the UDP connection itself. It's all... it uses no netcode from the original game.
Yeah, a coordinator is basically just administration and handling user requests and not bothering with any game logic whatsoever. That's your part, the game server, actually.
Right.
Yeah, and like supporting different BW API versions is not entirely complete yet because of reasons. I don't know the technical details about that. So I mentioned before that I'd like to enforce 4.4 version of BW API, but it might be a necessity because currently some earlier versions are simply not working.
Yeah, if we only did 4.4, we would practically be done at this point. But for some reasons, 4.1 is just, as soon as we try to load it, it's just spitting in our face, and Wine is refusing to load it. And I can't figure out why, and I'm not sure why it's happening. So yeah, some older versions are not working, and we would also have to get tournament modules compiled for each of the versions. Which is just even more work to do if you want to support everything else.
Yeah, so we were originally thinking that we should support all the BW API versions and then slowly phase them out, but there might be not enough manpower to do that. And I'm pretty certain that given enough time, we can figure everything out, but I'm not really certain if that's worth the effort.
Yeah, we could probably support 4.2 over transition period. We have pretty much full 4.2 and 4.4 support at the moment.
Which is certainly progress. Yes, yeah, so that is the current state of Snail. I also posted a video of it working, like an actual live demo, if you will. So we, other than being unpolished, functionally it's done. I would almost call it an alpha state at this point. All right, with that being said, let's talk about, or wait a second, Ank, did you work anything related to that, like BW API inner workings?
No, I'd say I've helped point out things, and I've helped with like fixing some bugs. Everybody knows probably about the little distance bug and stuff like that, I think. So when they were working on those bugs, I helped a little bit with that, but other than that, I really haven't touched it myself. There's a lot of the underlying code that I haven't even looked at yet, so I don't understand it, like protobuf, and I barely understand that.
What was that bug you mentioned?
Oh, there was a small discrepancy in the distances BW API would return, because it treated a point as though it was a region of space with 3 pixels by 3 pixels, basically. This was because it treated a point as though it had a bounding box, because they had copied the code that handles units to cover points as well, and they're not actually handled the same way, because units in Brood War gain an extra pixel to the bottom and right sides. And I think so you get extra pixels because you handle it symmetrically when you're dealing with units, but when you're dealing with a unit and a point, you do deal with this asymmetrically. And so you have to change the code to handle that. Otherwise, you basically gain an extra point or extra distance when you're approaching a point with a unit from certain directions.
Well, to me, it depends on how you look at it, because as I see it, you have a top left position and then a size, and the so like the end position is actually the start position plus the size minus one.
That's typically something that would only come out in bot versus bot play, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And you have to be pixel perfect.
Well, it was a BW API function to begin with, so only bots got the wrong value.
Yeah, there was also a small bit of logic that was improperly copied over from but when they were translating the open, I guess, or the original decompiled source code from Brood War into the API, they somehow flipped the conditions or something like that, or lost track of their logic, because they reversed the conditions, but they didn't reverse their equal sign, because it was equal then or less than, and they had to invert that logic. And that didn't happen. So there was a slight, I think that's an additional pixel or something like that. So there was little things like that.
I didn't actually track that one down, but to be honest, that could actually be a refactoring change or anything like after that. I doubt that I actually got it wrong while reverse engineering it.
Well, it's a simple matter of conditions, it was so there's the distance formula from Brood War handles the near axis condition, where if you're near an axis, it approximates the distance is just saying you are on the axis. If you're anywhere within, like, so I want to say it's within a quarter of the like a quarter of 90 degrees or something like that, you must be on the axis, or you're treated as though you're on the axis. So it'll just give you the straight distance from the longest axis to that point. Whereas if you're more of a straight diagonal out, then you're given a approximate calculation based on their simplification of a distance formula. And so the whereas like Brood War handled it, returned them in the order of long then short, the API returned it in the reverse order. So it was short circuiting and saying, if it's on the short axis, we'll just go short circuit and return early. Whereas, and so you have a flipping of conditions there.
How do you even spot something like that?
I forget. I think I was just, I was curious as to just displaying the difference between the approximate and the circular distance, I guess. And so I wanted to display those to get a good idea for that. Actually had some screenshots where I actually drew the circles, the distance rings, concentric distance rings around a drone, so you could see how far each of these were and how there was a difference between the two, because many times you had people assuming that various concentric distances were very close approximations or very similar to each other. Like say, if I was 10 distance away from a drone, many people would approximate that as a circular 10 distance, but it's more like a square with rounded corners at the smaller distances, whereas at the longer distances, it's more closer to a circle.
So basically, you have to keep in mind a grid-based math and not purely Euclidean.
Yeah, so you have to decide whether or not you're going to be pixel precise in your micro, because if you're going to be pixel precise, then you have to use the right formula.
Do you think it gives an actual competitive advantage if you're pixel precise, or is that resolution too big or too small for actual gains?
It depends. If the units aren't moving a lot back and forth, it can definitely play a role, because it will be the biggest source of error. Like if you're trying to target a turret and your micro is a pixel off, you might end up flying around doing nothing, or you might end up flying into turret range. You have the whole Muta versus Archon trick, where you can actually beat the Archon with Mutas by just staying barely out of range and hitting it. In that case, as long as you can predict its movement fairly accurately, you can beat it down. But generally speaking, due to latency, the effect of that should be greater than most pixel precise commands, depending on tolerance and stuff.
I don't know how big is the Mutalisk versus Archon range difference, but I know that humans actually can micro Archons down with Mutalisks. So I suspect it's a little bit bigger than a few pixels.
It's probably close to 32 pixels, but the problem is when you have a Archon moving, if it switches directions, so say if it's moving away from you, and then it turns around and moves towards you, not only have latency to deal with, but you also have that speed differential from the moving away versus moving towards. So if say a unit was, I don't know the Archon speed, but let's say if we throw out like if it's moving 6 pixels per frame and you have a latency of 3 frames, then that's an 18 distance difference. And if you assumed it was moving away from you at the time, and if it turned and moved towards you, or if it just slightly shifted an angle, that could easily be a 25 difference in frames or pixels on the frame that you expect to attack. So you might overcompensate or undercompensate depending on where it's moving.
Also, the unit speeds are by no means constant, especially for flying units.
Yeah, for flying and floating units like Archons, you have an acceleration as well. So yeah, you have to handle that. That gets complicated.
Oh, how wonderful is this! And that being said, I'd like to circle back to an earlier topic, which is competitions and tournaments. Lately, there has been a little bit of uproar about CIG, COG. Have you been part of that discussion, any of you?
Nope.
I've seen it, but I haven't participated in it.
Can you describe what was the crux of the issue?
As far as I understand, they had announced in beforehand that they would share the competitor list, and it like ended up not happening. Like before the submission deadline, but like they said they would announce the participants after the registration deadline, so that people have time to prepare before the submission deadline.
Yeah, and in addition to that, it seemed to me that they were very hesitant to communicate anything. The matter is somewhat resolved now, and I'm not passing any kind of judgment here, but it feels to me that response times were slow, and they managed to upset a lot of players, which is or a lot of bot authors, which is not something you should do. That being said, what do you think makes a tournament good or great, and what is the quality in tournaments you would like to see, and what tournament you would attend? Not just theoretically.
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, certainly you have to reach a critical mass of people watching and participating, I think, is really the key there. You have to have a steady amount of participants. I think that's probably... I don't really follow the AI tournaments that much. I mean, I hear it posted because I follow, you know, this channel and Facebook group and stuff, and so I'll hear about the results, but and then Jay's blog will get flooded with various breakdowns of the various bots performing in the tournaments, but other than that, I don't really hear too much.
Yeah, well, my observations are that having a StarCraft bot competition in itself, it's maybe not a big enough scene to be interesting in itself. So what I mean by this, that conferences like AWID or even CIG, which do have a StarCraft bot competition, but it's not the main event or not the only event, seem to be more popular than just pure StarCraft bot competitions. Do you agree or disagree with that?
I think I would agree, but I'm not sure if it will stay that way, but that's definitely the situation at the moment.
Yeah, that is just the current state of affairs.
I can see, like, how AWID, for example, has a lot of current interest already in the rest of the conference, but I can also see how it may change if there's more interest in StarCraft AI, because that can, like any other tournament, could appeal a lot more to the average viewer.
Having a physical venue also gives some more credibility or interest to these conferences. I mean, if you have to physically go there and invest your time and effort, you take it more seriously. That being said, most bot authors don't actually go there, but still the participants are physically there, and that's just a different kind of experience.
Yeah, sure. I'd say it's probably true. I think it's a bit like the difference between watching like college level versus high school level in like a sport or something like that. And it just at the high school level, you're just not quite as interested in the outcome. It's more of whether or not you're invested in the team or whether you happen to be there for some other reason and just happen to watch. Because I don't think the bots necessarily put out performance that people would typically identify as with qualifying for like the top in the world, and so it's not quite like the Olympics and stuff like that where you're trying to see what's the best player of StarCraft in the world and what their new records. So unless you found a way of curating games or setting it up such that you could have more general appeal, or if you got a promising, you know, caster, like saying getting the Tates Toastus combo to cast some games would definitely up the appeal.
That is something very interesting, and I was thinking about that because I myself has been casting bot games, and having some talented casters feature interesting games would be really great. I have no idea how to organize that. I don't know that many casters, but yeah, maybe it's something that we can work on.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a ways in the future, because I think you'd have to reach that stage, you'd want to start working more on team development of AIs to get AIs to higher levels, because I think at the current level you have a lot of individual creators, and that leads to fairly low level AIs or very long development times. But I think if you had a team of maybe 3 to 5 developers working on a bot, or if you had like a team development league or team participation league, you might, like, especially for human plus, like, there was an idea for having the bot creators plus their bots participate in battles against each other in like a 2v2 match.
Yeah, but 2v2 is maybe not the best example, because it's an entirely different meta, and like coordinating the bots together would take a lot of effort, which is not something fun or interesting to do. I'm not, maybe one bot controlling two players would be better, or one team coding both bots. But yeah, I totally see the direction you mean with this.
I think he was actually trying to say that the bot authors would play together with the bots. Like, instead of having two bots on a team, you have one human, the bot creator, and the bot together.
That would be hilarious, but I think most bot authors are not that great players, myself included.
Yeah, it's a way of mixing things up, because I think there's generally a considerable more appeal when you have humans involved, if for no reason than they're more expressive and they're more relatable than the bots, I think.
Yeah, sure. Do you think actual prizes are a motivator in tournaments? Like a giant teddy bear for the first place?
Currently, no, but I'm not counting on winning anything yet, so I don't know that I would consider that. I mean, I've definitely in the past considered participation in AI tournaments because of the prizes available, but when you start getting involved in actually creating these things, it's considerably different.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that it's actually a mode of Aether either, because like I see the bots having put thousands of hours into them. Like if you put 8,000 hours of work into your bot, you may win like a couple of $100, which is pretty much insignificant for the amount of stuff that you've done. Like if you're gonna make a bot, you're probably gonna do it for fun and not for gains.
The prize money have to be massive for it is to be a, like an economically viable thing compared to just getting a day job in software development. But that being said, I think there is a threshold that would attract programmers who otherwise would not do this. But it's not an absolute number. I think the problem with that, if you, let's say for example, you say first prize is $1,000, then that itself will not attract more participants. And you get this problem that you have too much for too little entries. I mean, if three guys participate and split the money, they can write as bad bot as they want to. So on the other hand, you can have the opposite problem as well. You can have too little money, as you said, no one would invest thousands of hours into bots for $350. I think the answer to this is there has to be a prize pool which is based on the number of participants. So it would be like a circle that's self-reinforcing. Like, for example, there's just an example I just made up. Let's say for every participant, every verifiable independent participant, I will throw $10 into the prize pool or something like that.
I've seen, I forget where it is, but yeah, you get like small sort of prize pool, like competitive, where every participant pitches in towards the pot, and then whoever wins the game plays the pot. It's a bit like a card game at that level.
I agree. It would probably be pretty interesting, but it would also require people to be on a lot more even ground, I think. I don't think you could allow people to bring in their existing bot, because that would kind of be harsh for new players to participate.
Yeah, but there is always a disparity. You can't really do anything with that, and you can't reasonably ask someone who has been working on his bot for years to start from scratch. And even if they do, how do you verify that they just don't do the same thing again?
Yeah, that's kind of the trick with the whole bot problem, is that you get fairly consistent results for very little effort after you've made it. But up to that point, you get very inconsistent or non-existent results. You can't just enter a nobody who's been at this for just a little while. They actually have to have reached the stage of completing a bot. So there's a fairly high threshold there to reach the competitive stage compared to other sports, I feel.
But there is an answer for that. In other games, you have different leagues. Let's say if you won a tournament, you get placed one league higher or something. So that can be handled, or that your bot is measured in some kind of way, and next time if you use the same bot, you get into a different league.
Yeah, that's definitely a solution.
But the money has to come from somewhere. And I think it's not fair to have it as a poker game. I mean, bot authors put a lot of work into it. I would not expect them to put money as well. It's like you get to pay to be able to work.
And I don't know if they would, because if they were, I think if it was more flexibility in who won. Like, when you have StarCraft tournaments, there's a lot of like uncertainty as to who will win, who won't. Like, not necessarily. Like, recently, like, you've had some of these StarCraft players who have never made it into the top four, who have started beating people. And, like, if you listen to the Tastosis cast, they will tell you that whether or not they think someone is top four material or not. And, like, if that they expect that person to go all the way. And there have been some recent upsets, but for most tournaments, like, you already know who's going to be probably in there. And so could you expect someone to pitch in if they didn't have a reasonable expectation of making it to the finals? Really, that's the issue here, I think. Yeah. If there was a lot of flip-flopping, or if there was like a lot of tricks built up, then perhaps. But the fact that we have a tournament, I think in a way, like, the Student StarCraft tournament kind of drains a lot of that surprise factor, because you've got a constant tournament where just anytime you feel like winning, you just pop up your updates and just go out and win. There's no waiting, no prize pool. You have to wait for, expect. You just upload and go.
Yeah, that's true. It's quite different than human tournaments. That there's no question about that. So yeah, I think this is something that needs to be thought about, because the usual tournament formats are not very fitting here. And when the tournament format itself can influence the winner, then you have to make adjustments. Speaking of the SSCIT ladder, I love that there are actual movement in the top bots, and the places are where the top bots are remaining the same for a long time now, but there are fluctuations, and that's good. And new updates have a severe impact sometimes. Do you think there is an actual meta on the ladder right now?
I haven't been watching enough to know that.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. I think, like, there's a lot. The bots are, like, playing pretty much the same thing. So I don't know if you want to call that a meta, but it's not, because, like, that's the only thing working. But it seems like it has somehow stabilized, but I'm not sure it's because of win rates or just because of that's what the bot authors ended up doing.
Yeah, but there are some builds that are definitely more popular, but I'm not sure we can call that a meta. And that also stems from the fact that a lot of bots are forks built on something existing.
Yeah, we can take a look at the build order stats for Basil. If I remember correctly, like, the top 10 builds all, like, had the same number of occurrences. So it feels like there are, like, a set of builds, which everyone does, but it's a very diverse set of builds, and I wouldn't say it's not that much of a meta, to be honest.
Well, mostly, like, in the very, like, the top 10, you'll get some, when you get regular updates in that group, you'll notice some sort of meta. Like, I know there was a bit of a meta for a while for one base plays where you would try and power up on one base and win. I know, but I think that was mostly started by Crazio, and I think some others tried copying it with one base Zerg plays and stuff like that. And there was a bit of a rushing phase where everybody was trying to play really fast and wipe the other eight people out quickly. And then we had a bit of a meta phase where you had long drawn out games with large armies. But I don't know if those be considered metas so much as so you had a couple of noteworthy bots all sort of gravitating around trying certain strategies, because you have a large percentage, like maybe like half the bots that just won't really change. You've got some bots that'll use the same strategy every game, no matter what, and some that just vary slightly, but I don't know.
But every now and then a fresh new strategy gets added, and that's good to see. Like Grazius Cannon Rush, which is surprisingly effective. And there are a lot of untapped potential still in strategies that we didn't see yet. And also recently I've been seeing vast improvements in like Bioterran bots, and they are quite effective. Like Egbert is a formidable bot now, and he wasn't a few months or years ago. Another thing is a little bit back to the tournaments. You mentioned that this is a thing that you can't just enter as easily, even though students do bots as their entry or as their thesis, and that is something that is happening a lot. What do you think we could do to lower this barrier to entry? I think like pre-made example bots that you can just plug in would enhance this somewhat.
Yeah, BW API is generally very hard to work with and to set up. So I think BW API needs improvements too, to be honest.
I think it would also help to have, because we have various online resources like the wiki and stuff like that. It just, you have to hunt around through a lot of places. It would be helpful, I think, to have more bot author oriented resources, because a lot of the resources online are oriented towards human play rather than bot play, and they don't dictate the very precise behaviors. You might also just need actual development guides, or like in general guides for how to approach like a list of topics you have to cover and stuff like that, so that new potential authors could look at that and create a checklist of ideas or potential combination of ideas. That said, not sure how much that would help. I mean, it might help just to have the resources on hand, just because it makes lookup time and research time minimized. But a lot of authors really want to try something brand new. So if someone else has tried it, then they may not want to try that as well. Whereas other bot authors are just content with trying a new build. The simple already made bots, like the University of Alberta bot, that bot was great for trying out new builds quickly. So I think there's a fair amount of promise in a well-made bot like that.
Yeah, just a ready-to-use framework would help a lot.
Yeah. Some of it's the accessibility, because we're still using old Brood War rather than new Brood War.
That's definitely also a problem, but as Hannes said, out of the box working BW API and everything packaged together would help a lot.
Speaking of BW API and new Brood War, I think BW API 5 is coming along quite well, to be honest. As far as I know, like, basic functionality is there. You can, like, have your bot play even though there's a lot of memory leaks and not a lot of commands work. Like, it's like a thing.
That's good to hear, and it's still actively worked upon, so it will be done eventually.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a lot later than we wanted it, but yeah, it's going to be here relatively soon. Like, I wouldn't say more than 3 months, to be honest.
That's quite soon. And, I mean, we've been waiting for stuff for, depends on how you look on it, but 10 or 20 years, so it's not like we are in a rush. Alright, then that's all we had today. Thank you very much for being here, and see you next time.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks.